We're going to have our readings now. Two readings from Esther, and then Brad will come speak to us from your question.
In the open square of the city in front of the king's gate. Mordecai told him everything that had happened to him, including the exact amount of money Haman had promised to pay into the royal treasury for the destruction of the Jews. He also gave him a copy of the text of the edict for their annihilation, which had been published in Susa to show to Esther and explain it to her, and he told him to urge her to go into the king's presence to beg for mercy and plead with him for her people.
So they start this custom where before before they enter into the palace, they have to bow. But Mordecai is not going to do it. He's like, nope, I'm not having it. I'm not going to do this. All right, well, that's kind of interesting. What's Mordecai got against this guy that the rest don't? Well, we'll have to begin to that. So he doesn't. The rest do. Now, I want you to keep in mind, this is Persian style. This isn't, you know, drop a knee or do a bow and then you carry on. This is. I would demonstrate, but it's a bit hard on knees. You go all the way down, hands out, and in some cases you even kiss the ground. You're all the way down. Now that's a bit unsavory for some people, but this isn't outside the realms of. It's not prohibited if you're a Jew. So there's lots of indications throughout the Bible where Jews pay respect to authority as God commands, perfectly okay to do this. But for some reason, Mordecai just isn't having it. And so day after day, when he's at the gates, he just doesn't do it. And the other nobles and the other guards around are like, you know, you need to do this. He's like, pass. And eventually, they're like, all right, well, we need to tell Haman he's not following the rules. So they go and they tell Haman. It's not right away. They give him as much time as they can. And so Haman has to go and check this out for himself. And he sees that he approaches the gate. He doesn't matter. And he's enraged. He's enraged. And I don't know if it's explosion. Of course it's explosion, you know, but I don't know if there's more to that. And he's filled with anger. And they're like, well, you know, I know this is not what you want, but you know, we're kind of Jews, fine guy. Like, wait, he's a Jew. All right, new plan. I was going to kill Mordecai, but I'm gonna wipe out all those people. And I'm sure one of his advisors was like, well, why not, mate? I mean, I could go down and knock him on the head and be back in time for tea. Why do we need to go through all this? Well, trust me, we need to. And so Haman hatches a plan in his head. He's like, I've got to figure out how am I going to do this? How am I going to eradicate all of these Jews? And so he goes to Xerxes, and he says, Xerxes, there's a people living among your people who don't live the same way. They don't follow the same rules. They don't honor the same laws. Let me take care of it. In fact, for the honor of taking care of these people for you, I'll pay you 10,000 talents of silver into the royal treasury. For the honor of taking care of this for you. Anybody have a clue how much 10,000 talents of silver is today? What the value is? The street price for a talent of silver? 10,000 talents of silver is the equivalent of 215 million pounds. That's a non-trivial amount of money to go wipe out some people. That's what he was offering Xerxes. Now, Xerxes has his own ego. And he's like, well, I don't need him. I'll tell you what. You go take care of these people for me. Here's my signet ring, which speaks for me. Do whatever you need to do. Take care of these people, and don't bother me. Excellent. So he goes off, and in one of the things he does to make sure it's an auspicious event in the eyes of the gods is he casts lots. Now, casting lots is a theme in various places throughout the Bible, and you can draw allusions there, but he casts the lot, and it comes out that they're going to do this deed on the 13th day of the month of Adar, which is, you know, they're in month one. So that's a ways off. All right, well, this is the day. So he goes to he has the secretaries come in. On the 13th of the first month of Nisan, he has them all write out all the scripts and send them out to all of the provinces in the kingdom to proclaim on this day in the month of Adar, we're going to wipe them out. Now, here's the thing that's just a capital here, and I don't know if this was intentional or not, but Haman seems to have a lot of evil. He sent this out on the 13th, which meant, first and foremost, it would have gone out to the citadel right there, would have been posted first and foremost. The 13th of the month of Nisan was the day before Passover. Seems like he's making this personal. So the day before the Jews were to celebrate their liberation from Egypt, their freedom, their salvation from the angel of death and all of that, he's sending out this edict saying, a year from now, we're going to wipe the world out. That's an angry man. More on that later. So as that edict goes out, goes into Susa, Haman and Xerxes sit down and they have a dinner. And the rest of the court is just in turmoil. What is going on? What's happening here? And if you're not a Jew, there's got to be a point that where on some level you're thinking, well, thank goodness it's not me. You know, I'm an Edomite, and that could have been you as much as anyone else, and you're wondering what's next. You know, or you, for whatever reason, don't like the Jews, and you think, all right, well, this will show up, but why do we have to wait a year? Interesting point there. He cast the lot, and the lot landed on the 12th month, there in the first month of the 12th month. Weird how that works. A big, long length of time before this happens. So, the word gets out, and everyone is aware, and it's a crazy thing, right? It's a public edict. So all of the Jews are reading it at the same time and looking around like, wait, all these people around here are going to come in here? It's got to make for a really unsettling time. So the Jews do what the Jews do. They have a method in which they mourn, where they put on sackcloth and rest in ashes, etc. And Mordecai does this as well, so he comes out. And he goes to the city, he goes to the palace gate. Can't go any further because they do have a dress code, and apparently you can't enter the palace in sackcloth. So he has to sit outside. And fortunately, Esther's told that Mordecai's out there and he's in mourning. She has no idea what's going on. To be honest with you, the king really doesn't have much idea what's going on either. But she sends out a representative, finds out what's going on, comes back, sends him clothes, he doesn't wear them, and he sends back a message. He says, talk to the king. Talk to the king. Now this is what happens when the government is disinterested and really pays no attention to what's going on with the world around them. You can see in kingdom after kingdom throughout history where when monarchs and governments didn't really pay attention to what was going on, it allowed evil people to do what they wanted to do, and those kingdoms eventually fell. This is what we see here. But there's another layer to this that I want to comment on so we understand the full nature of the story. This is the third chapter at all. There's more to the story between Mordecai and Haman. Not necessarily a personal. They may have known each other on some level. But if Haman just found out he's a Jew, they obviously didn't know each other that well. Now, I don't, in this story, and it's kind of an interesting story, I don't make Mordecai out to be a hero here. He's not. The hero in this story, even though he's not mentioned, is God. And that runs right the way through this book. But the people, they're just humans. They're just people. There's no great heroes here. And Mordecai is certainly just a man. He just happens to be a dude. So why does he not bow down? Well, as I said, you could make the case that it was, you know, well, that kind of supplication is only meant for God. I'm going to bow down and to be a man. But they're precedent for that. So we've got to look at other reasons for Haman's rage and for his willingness to wipe out all of the Jews. And let's go to the first piece of this puzzle. Haman, the Agagite, which is not an easy word to say, trust me. The Agagite means that he came from a god. Now, 25 church points. Anyone know who a god is? Gog was the king of the Amalekites. Now, the Amalekites descended from Esau. Now, when there was that break between Jacob and Esau, and the Amalekites became, you know, grew into their own tribe, they were the sworn, hated enemy hates of the Jews. They hated them, among other reasons, because God chose them. So these people were aware of God. They were not completely ignorant of the existence of God of Israel. They just hated him for it. Hated people, hated God. And they were perpetually angry. So, finding out that this guy was a Jew, it wasn't enough to kill Mordecai. He saw an opportunity to wipe them all out and get a little revenge. Because, what happened to God? He was defeated by Saul and then executed by Samuel. Interesting side note here. Don't know if it plays in, but it just seems kind of interesting. Saul was a descendant of Kish the Benjaminite. Now, 50 church points. Anybody here care to guess who in the story also happened to be a descendant of Kish the Benjaminite? Mordecai! It just seems like a really interesting coincidence there. So, knowing that history, is it any wonder that this man refused to bow at a gate to a descendant of King Agag? I mean, after the Amalekites invaded the Jews over and over again, the constant war. In fact, there's a line in Exodus chapter 17 where it says, God will be at war with the Amalekites for generation after generation. Now, this is long past Saul and David. But here we are, back again, with an Amalekite trying to wipe out the Jews yet again. Another layer. And he's angry enough. Now, Haman's a rich man. He doesn't have 10,000 talents of silver. So what he's planning to do is plunder the Jews, take all the spoils of that plunder, and give it to Xerxes. So that way, if anything comes out in the end, he's covered because Xerxes has all the loot. So it's a very clever plan in its own way. But God's limits, and this is where it gets interesting, because you look at the plans that happen and the order in which they do, and you have a situation where you have a I don't think Xerxes is a particularly evil person. I just think he's kind of worthless. He doesn't have much backbone. He doesn't have much character. He's not a person. He's not an noble person by any stretch. I just don't have much time for him, to be honest with you. And he's a place there. He gets rid of a wife who does seem to have some character and moral backbone and puts her out. And Esther shows up, and Esther equally, but God is obviously watching out for her and puts her in this place where she becomes queen, and she will play a role later. Mordecai is just a guy that happens to be there and is at first a victim of this injustice, but ultimately we'll have to see how this plays out. But he's there, he chooses not to bow because he makes a moral decision. He has to bow, and he says, I'm not going to bow, it's not. They hate God, they hate us. I'm just not going to do it. And so here we are. Now, God all along puts these people in place. And, like the dominoes, when Haman sets in motion his plan, he casts the lots. And I'm not going to, I'm not relying on God. I'm going to rely upon chance. And we have the 12th month of the year. Weirdly, the dice roll to the 12th month. So the Jews have all year to figure out what to do. They have an entire year to plan, and that will come into focus later. But the point is, God was there. And that's really, really what it boils down to, is God was there. God was present. Even in this really dark moment, where a guy who is in power has the means, the audacity, and the capability of wiping out all of the Jews, puts his plan in motion. Now, I want you to think about if there's any point in your life that you can remember where things seem really dark. You didn't see a way out. You didn't see how it was going to work, how things were going to happen. I can think of 3 or 4 instances in my own life. But if I look back, I can see those spots all along the way where it's like tumblers falling into place. that helped me get to where I am today. And I firmly believe that was God working my life in the way I could not see. And that's God in this today. As I say, Mordecai was just a guy. Mordecai was just a guy who didn't want to pay honors to someone that hated him and his people. And I respect that. But there's nothing heroic. It's just a man that makes a stand. At some point, each one of us may have to make a stand for something as well. And I hope that I have that kind of result. That, in a way, is a bit heroic to me. And we may face that, and we may find comfort and courage in his example. But God has given all that. And I want to finish up with a phrase that has comforted me throughout my walk in those times where I didn't see what the bigger picture is. And it was the line was something like this. When you can't trace the hand, trust the heart. When you can't see the hand of God, trust the heart of God. And know that in the end, it will come out in favor. Now, I don't have a happy ending today, because I drew the short straw on Rota, and I got, once again, I got the bad news chapter. But I'm sure Steve or Andy will be able to come to you with the goodness that comes out of this. So for now, we'll have to leave this with Mordecai sitting in sackcloth and ashes, sending word to Esther to say, look, plead with the king, give him a spare of those. And that's a huge ask. You don't know this now if you're not reading, but going before the king without being summoned is a dicey affair. You have a 50-50 chance of being put to death for bothering, even if you're the queen. So it's a big ask. Now, whether or not she does, we'll have to save for next time, which should incentivize all of you to come back and find out. So remember, whatever's happening, however dark it may seem, God is always working in the background. In subtle ways, maybe he's just waiting for that right domino to be in the right place to start the thing in motion that will end up putting you exactly where you want to be. So if you have any questions or concerns or want to know more about any of this, there's plenty of people who are around after this to talk about this if you want to understand more. But with that, I'd like to pray, and then I'll turn it back over to Steve. Lord, thank you for this powerful message of the subtle miracles that God works. I pray, Lord, that you would go with us throughout our day and throughout this week and encourage us and help us look for those tiny moments where you work in the background in small ways to lead to big and powerful changes in our lives. Lord, thank you for the gift of your word that can encourage us and help us learn about you in new and interesting ways. Lord, I thank you for the examples of Esther and Mordecai, two people who found themselves in difficult situations that are doing their best. Lord, I thank you for bringing us all together today. In your name I pray.